Victoria Winters hated Chapter 12 before Mark had finished reading the first page aloud. She sat across from him in the private room of the Algonquin Hotel, with one hand around a china cup and the other tapping a red pen against the manuscript. Her silver hair fell to her jaw in a cut so clean it looked expensive even in bad lighting. She wore black silk, emerald earrings, and the expression of a woman who had sold 8 million books by refusing to praise weak sentences. "Stop," Victoria said. Mark stopped. The rain against the hotel windows filled the room while his last sentence died between them. Outside, New York traffic crawled through a wet November afternoon. Inside, the carpet smelled of old wool and lemon polish. "You can write longing," Victoria said. "You can write embarrassment. You can write a hand hovering above another hand as if it were an international incident." "That sounds useful for romance," Mark said. "Do not get charming. I am not done." He closed his mouth. Mark Ellison was 34, with dark blonde hair that needed a cut, narrow shoulders, and the pale look of a man who forgot to go outside when deadlines gathered. He wore a navy blazer over a white shirt because his agent had said Victoria liked professionalism. He had shaved twice that morning and still felt unprepared. His glasses kept sliding down his nose from the heat in the room. On the page, he was nobody. On the contract, he was a ghost. Victoria Winters was supposed to be writing her comeback novel after 3 quiet years and 1 very public divorce. In practice, Victoria had given Mark a 40-page outline, a stack of old fan letters, and a warning. "Do not imitate me," she had said during their first video call. "Everyone imitates me badly. I need someone to carry the furniture without pretending to own the house." Mark had nodded, as if he knew what that meant. For 6 months, he had carried the furniture. The book was called The Last Room at Bellwether. It followed a widowed architect, Eliza Gray, who returned to a seaside hotel to restore its ruined ballroom and fell in love with the woman who had inherited it. Victoria's outline had plot twists, storms, family secrets, and one kiss in a locked conservatory. What it did not have was Eliza's heart. Mark found that by accident in a dress. He did not tell Victoria that part. Victoria turned a page with the red pen. Chapter 12 reads, "As if Eliza has forgotten what she wants. She is conflicted." "No," Victoria said. "She is waiting for the author to decide." Mark felt that land under his ribs. "I can revise." "Of course you can revise. You are a ghostwriter. Revision is your natural habitat." "Thank you." "That was not a compliment." "I know." Her mouth twitched, not quite a smile. Then she pointed the pen at him. "The earlier chapters are better. Chapter 7, especially. When Eliza tries on the old evening gown in the hotel attic." Mark looked down at the manuscript. Chapter 7 had been the first one he wrote as Marissa. The name started as a file label. Marissa Notes. Marissa Voice. Marissa Scene Attempts. He created the folder after 3 bad weeks of trying to write Eliza's interior life through research alone. He read essays, interviews, memoirs, costume histories, and annotated romance novels until his apartment became a paper storm. Every paragraph still sounded like a man taking careful notes. Then a costume arrived. Victoria had sent a research package from the studio that planned to adapt the book if it sold well. Inside were photographs of 1930s hotel staff, old floor plans, fabric samples, and a reproduction evening gown made from sea green satin. The gown was meant as visual reference for the attic scene. It came wrapped in tissue, with a note from Victoria's assistant. "For texture," the note said. Mark touched the satin and wrote 3 good sentences, then nothing. That night, after pacing his apartment until the downstairs neighbor hit the ceiling with a broom handle, he took the gown from its box. He told himself he needed to understand the garment's weight. A writer could justify anything in the name of detail. He held it against his body first, then over his clothes. Then, sweating and furious with himself, he undressed and stepped into it. The gown did not fit well. It pulled across his back, hung loose at the bust, and stopped too high at his ankles. The zipper refused the last 2 inches. He stood in front of the hallway mirror under a yellow bulb and looked ridiculous. Then he noticed how his shoulders changed. Not smaller, not hidden, different. He lifted one arm and the satin whispered down his side. He turned, and the skirt moved after him with a delayed grace that made him understand Eliza's body in the attic better than any article had. The scene arrived in pieces, the dust in the throat, the chill of old floorboards under bare feet, the shame of wanting to be seen in something no one had offered. He wrote until dawn. The next day, he bought a wig online. He called it character work. That word did a lot of unpaid labor. Marissa came from the second night. He sat at his desk in the gown, a chestnut wig resting poorly on his head, and signed a page of notes with the name before he knew he had chosen it. Marissa's handwriting leaned more. Marissa used a finer pen. Marissa wrote Eliza with fewer defenses. Mark knew the arrangement was strange. He also knew the pages worked. By the fourth week, his apartment had two desks without meaning to. The real desk stood by the window, where Mark answered emails, tracked invoices, and wrote competent sentences under fluorescent light. The other desk was the small round table in the corner, the one he had bought from a closing cafe and never used. Marissa took that table first as a joke, then as a rule. On Marissa nights, he cleaned the surface before opening the laptop. No coffee rings, no unpaid bills, no grocery receipts. He lit a small lamp with a green shade, pinned the wig with less panic, and put on whatever helped him hear the scene. Sometimes the sea green gown, sometimes a blouse and skirt, sometimes only lipstick, when the day had already taken too much. The pages changed because the room changed. Mark wrote plot, Marissa wrote hesitation. Mark explained why Eliza returned to the hotel. Marissa understood why Eliza paused before touching the banister. Mark described Celeste as beautiful. Marissa noticed that Celeste wore sleeves rolled to the elbow because she had been fixing a leak herself. Victoria's emails grew shorter as the pages improved. "This has a pulse," she wrote after chapter 7. "Good. Less mist, more teeth," she wrote after chapter 8. "Whoever wrote the blue scarf scene may stay," she wrote after chapter 9. Mark read that last note at 2 in the morning, still in the wig, with one heel hooked around the chair leg. He looked at the username on the document and felt caught in a way no one had intended. Marissa. He almost changed it back that night. He opened the profile settings, typed Mark, and stopped before saving. The cursor blinked inside the name field while the apartment pipes knocked in the wall. Then he closed the settings. The next morning, he answered Victoria from Mark's email. "Glad the pages are working." He did not tell her. His hands shook after sending it. He did not tell her the blue scarf scene came from a memory of standing in his mother's closet at 13, rubbing a silk scarf between his fingers while the house was empty. He did not tell her he had returned the scarf badly, folded too small, and spent a week waiting for accusation. No one accused him. That had become its own wound. Victoria knew too, though not why. "Chapter 7 is alive," Victoria said. "Chapter 12 is competent. I have enough competent pages to wallpaper this hotel. The deadline is Friday. Then become interesting before Friday." Mark looked at her. "That is your editorial note?" "That is the polite version." He removed his glasses and cleaned them with a cloth from his pocket. His hands needed something to do. "I am trying to protect the structure." "No," Victoria said. "You are protecting yourself." The room narrowed. "You hired me to be invisible," Mark said. "I hired you to be useful. Invisible is your personal preference." He put his glasses back on. Victoria's face sharpened again, composed and merciless. "Why did you ask to meet in person?" he asked. "Because your agent said you were in New York for 2 days. You could have sent notes." "I did." "You avoided the important ones." "I answered every email." "You answered the safe parts." Victoria tapped chapter 7 again. "There is a woman in this book who understands what clothing can unlock." Then, 20 pages later, she speaks like a man summarizing a museum placard. "I want to know what happened." Mark stared at the manuscript. The red pen rested across the margin like a cut. I lost the thread, he said. No, Victoria said. You dropped it. The private room had no clock. Mark checked his watch anyway. 3:40. His train back to Philadelphia left at 6:30. In his overnight bag at the coat check, folded beneath two shirts, Marissa's black wrap dress waited in a garment sleeve. He had brought it because he could not write the hotel ballroom scene without her. He had not planned for anyone else to know. Victoria leaned back. Tell me about Marissa. Mark's breath stopped short. He kept his face still through force. Who? Do not insult me. The document history changed 3 months ago. Chapter 7 came from a user profile named Marissa. So did 8, 9, and half of 11. Then Mark returned for Chapter 12, and the book lost its nerve. Heat climbed Mark's neck. That was a drafting profile, he said. Obviously. A tool. Obviously not. The rain struck the window harder. Mark heard water rush along the sill. Victoria, he said. I do not care about your private life for sport, she said. I care because the book depends on the part of you that wrote those chapters. That is not how ghostwriting works. It is exactly how writing works. Ghostwriting only adds better manners. He stood. The chair legs scraped the carpet, too loud for the room. I need air, he said. Victoria capped her pen. Take 10 minutes. He left before she could soften the command. The hallway outside smelled of coffee and rain-soaked coats. Mark walked past framed photographs of famous writers, each dead face preserved in confidence. At the coat check, he retrieved his bag from a young man who did not look up from his phone. Mark carried it into the restroom near the lobby. The room was empty. Marble sinks. Brass fixtures. A vase of white flowers on the counter. He locked himself in the larger stall and sat on the closed toilet with the bag between his shoes. His phone buzzed. A message from his agent. How is V? Be agreeable. Mark almost laughed. He unzipped the bag. The black wrap dress lay under his shirts, folded with more care than anything else he owned. He touched the fabric and felt the frantic pace of the afternoon slow by one measure. This was not a solution. It might ruin the job. It might give Victoria a story to tell over lunch for the next decade. It might also be the only honest answer he had. He changed in the stall with the efficiency of a man diffusing a device he built himself. Shirt off, trousers folded, dress wrapped, tied, adjusted. The fabric fell to his knees and made his legs look longer. He put on low heels from the bag, then the chestnut wig. He had learned to pin it better. Not perfectly, better. Makeup took 7 minutes because fear sharpened his hands. Foundation, liner, mascara. A rose lipstick he liked because it did not shout. When he stepped out to the mirror, Marissa looked back. She was not glamorous. Mark's narrow face remained visible beneath the makeup. His jaw did not vanish. The dress suited her because it did not try to make her delicate. It gave her a line, a way to stand. Marissa looked terrified. Fair, Mark said. His voice sounded lower than the face suggested. He did not change it. Marissa had his voice when she was brave enough to use it. He put Mark's clothes in the bag, washed his hands, and went back upstairs. Victoria was reading when he entered the private room. She looked up. For the first time since he had met her, Victoria Winters had no immediate sentence ready. Mark stood in the doorway with one hand gripping the bag strap. The hallway behind him held voices and clinking cups. The room ahead held the woman whose name would be on his book. This is Marissa, he said. Victoria set the manuscript down. Come in, she said. He did. She did not rise. She did not perform admiration or shock. She watched him cross the room and sit, knees pressed together beneath the table, because the dress demanded attention in every movement. Thank you, Victoria said. The words unsettled him more than surprise would have. For what? For trusting the room. I am not sure I do. Wise. He almost smiled. Victoria uncapped her pen again, then stopped. Which name should I use? The question entered the room with more care than anything else she had said. "Marissa is fine," he said. "Only here? For now." "Good then, Marissa. Tell me why Chapter 12 is dead." He stared at her. "You are going straight back to the manuscript?" "Of course. You did not put on a dress so I could stare at you like an exhibit." The bluntness steadied him. He opened the manuscript. "Chapter 12 is dead because Eliza gets too much control," Marissa said. Victoria's eyes sharpened. "Go on." "She decides what she wants too cleanly. She says the correct thing to Celeste. She frames her desire as mature, manageable, and temporary. It is false." "Why?" Marissa touched the page with one painted nail. "Because Chapter 7 shows her wanting the gown before she has language for the wanting." "Chapter 12 should scare her. Not because Celeste is dangerous, because being wanted back would make the wanting real." Victoria leaned back. "There you are." The praise struck low and complicated. Mark would have deflected it. Marissa let it sit for one breath before speaking. "She should almost ruin it," Marissa said. "How?" "Celeste invites her to the restored ballroom before anyone else sees it. Eliza dresses practically, because she wants to prove she is there for work. Then she sees Celeste wearing the old green gown from the attic." Victoria's pen began moving. "Celeste restored it?" Victoria asked. "No, she had it remade. That matters. Eliza thought the gown was an artifact. Celeste understood it as a promise." "Good." Eliza gets angry. "Better. She says Celeste has turned a private thing into a performance." "Excellent. Celeste says privacy is not the same as shame." Victoria stopped writing. The sentence hung there. Mark felt it too late and too openly. Victoria looked at him, not at Marissa's dress, not at the wig, but at his face beneath all of it. "That is the book," she said. He looked down. "I did not mean to put myself in it." "No writer ever does. Then we wonder why the pages bleed. I am not a novelist. You are today." He laughed once, but it had no humor in it. "My name will not be on the cover." "No," Victoria said. "Mine will. That means I am responsible for what I borrow." "Borrow?" "From you. From Marissa." He folded his hands on the table. The nail polish was a dark plum, chipped on one thumb. This began as a method. "I needed to write Eliza. And now?" He looked toward the window. Rain blurred the city into gray columns and red brake lights. "Now I do not know what I need," he said. Victoria sat with that answer. "I can tell you what the book needs." "Please do. That is less frightening. The book needs Chapter 12, rewritten from the wound, not the outline. It needs Eliza to make the wrong choice for a human reason. It needs Celeste to refuse easy forgiveness. It needs the gown to stop being costume and become consequence." Marissa nodded. "Can you do that by Friday?" Victoria asked. "Yes." "Can Mark?" The question should have annoyed him. It did not. It understood too much. "Mark can type," Marissa said. Victoria smiled then, small and real. "Useful man. He tries. Does he hate you?" Marissa's mouth went dry. "No." "Does he fear you?" "Yes." Fear often arrives before manners. They worked for 2 hours. The manuscript became a field of red ink and sudden arrows. Victoria paced when thinking. Marissa sat with one heel tucked under the chair, no longer caring whether the posture looked graceful. They argued over whether Celeste should speak first in the ballroom. They cut 3 pages of polished avoidance. They wrote 1 exchange on hotel stationery because Victoria liked the thickness of the paper. Halfway through the 2nd cup of coffee, Marissa asked the question Mark had avoided for months. "If the book works," she said, "what do you say when people ask how you wrote it?" Victoria looked up from the page. "I say I hired a good ghost." "That is the standard answer." "It is also true." "Not all of it." "No," Victoria said, "not all." Marissa waited. Victoria set the pen down. "Your contract protects your anonymity. It also protects mine. That is the trade. If you want credit, we discuss it with lawyers before anyone breathes near a journalist. I do not want credit. Then what do you want? Marissa had no ready answer. Money? Yes. Work? Yes. Safety? Certainly. None of those explained the ache that came when he imagined readers underlining Eliza's fear and sending praise to Victoria alone. I want it to matter that I was there, Marissa said. Victoria's face changed by one small degree. It matters in the work. That sounds convenient. It is convenient, Victoria said. It is also the only place a ghost can live without permission from the market. The answer hurt because Victoria did not dress it as kindness. And Marissa? Marissa asked. Victoria picked up the pen again, but did not write. Marissa is not a marketing hook unless you choose that. Do not let anyone, including me, turn her into one. For a moment, the hotel room felt less like a meeting room and more like a locked chapel built for difficult bargains. At 5:40, a server brought fresh coffee and froze for half a second at the sight of Marissa. Victoria looked up. Thank you, Daniel. Daniel recovered. Of course, Miss Winters. He left. Marissa released the breath she had held. Victoria did not look away from the page. You will survive being seen by waitstaff. I prefer my revelations with fewer witnesses. Then do not enter hotels. Noted. At 6, Mark's phone buzzed again, his agent. Train soon. Did she approve pages? Marissa showed the screen to Victoria. Victoria read it and snorted. Tell him I approve the writer. That will cause questions. Good. Agents need circulation. Marissa typed, meeting productive. Revision due Friday. Her thumb hovered over send. She added, she had strong notes. Victoria laughed. Coward. Professional coward. He sent it. By 6:15, the manuscript lay in a neater stack. Mark needed to change before catching the train, but he did not move. The private room had become strange in its familiarity. The coffee cups. The red pen, the rain, Victoria checking a margin note with her glasses low on her nose. What happens now? He asked. You rewrite chapter 12. After that, Victoria removed her glasses. Professionally, we finish the book. I send you the second half of your fee. The publisher praises me for finding my voice again. You pretend not to be annoyed. Personally, that is not my department unless you ask. Marissa looked at her. Victoria's face softened by a degree. Then personally, you decide what parts of this are tools and what parts are true. You take your time. You avoid people who demand a thesis before they offer kindness. Do you have a thesis? About you? No. That surprises me. I am old enough to know a first draft when I see one. The words should have felt patronizing. From Victoria, they felt like craft advice applied to the body. Marissa stood and gathered the pages. I should change. You may, if you want. I have a train. Trains admit women in wrap dresses. My city does not know Marissa. Cities learn. He looked toward the door. The hallway held strangers, staff, the bright lobby, mirrors, and the coat check. The restroom stall offered escape back into Mark, if he wanted it. He did want it. He also did not. I am not ready for the train, he said. Then do the lobby, Victoria said. Small scene, clear objective. You make life sound like revision notes. Life has poor structure. I help where I can. She stood and picked up her coat. I will walk out with you. They left the private room together. The hallway did not gasp. The photographs of dead writers did not turn. A woman in a beige coat glanced at Marissa's dress, then at Victoria, then returned to her phone. Daniel, the server, passed with a tray and nodded as if Marissa belonged among cups and rain and famous names. In the lobby, the chandelier made every surface too bright. Mark felt the old panic rise, then felt Marissa's shoes on the marble. Low heels, steady enough. He held the manuscript against his chest. Victoria stopped near the doors. Send me the pages by Thursday night, she said. You said Friday. I lied to motivate you. That is terrible management. I am an author. We call it instinct. Marissa smiled. Victoria offered her hand. Marissa took it. Victoria's grip was dry and firm. Good night, Marissa, Victoria said. The name did not echo. It simply entered the lobby and stayed there. Good night, Victoria. Outside, the rain had thinned to mist. Marissa stood under the awning after Victoria's car pulled away. Taxis passed. People moved around her with umbrellas and shopping bags and no interest in her private catastrophe. Her train ticket sat on Mark's phone. Her clothes sat in Mark's bag. The manuscript under her arm belonged to Victoria Winters, legally. The pages inside it belonged to someone harder to name. She walked one block before changing her mind about the train. At a small cafe near the station, she took a corner table, ordered tea, and opened the manuscript. The barista called her Miss without ceremony. Marissa thanked him with Mark's voice and did not apologize for it. Chapter 12 waited. She crossed out the first line. Then she wrote a new one. Eliza knew the gown before she knew herself and hated Celeste for seeing both. Marissa read it twice. Too grand, perhaps. Too sharp. Alive, though. She kept writing until the tea went cold, and the next train became the one after that. When the cafe lights dimmed, she saved the file under Marissa's name and sent it before Mark could make it smaller again tonight, or apologize for wanting anything.